The faithful believe when the petals of the white tree fall, it is no idle thing, but the very tears of the Valar themselves. Big great wave!
Great wave!
Cool, bruh. I'm gonna ride that wave.
Dude, I'd love to see like a Roland Emmerich version of this.
Who's that?
He did like Independence Day and Moonfall, like a lot of disaster movies. Uh-huh. So I'd love to see like The Fall of Numenor coming summer 2025.
It could be sick. Like,
and, like, Jake Gyllenhaal and Dennis Quaid come back and like, there's no great wave coming. Jake Gyllenhaal, you gotta listen to me. There's a great wave on the way. I keep dreaming about it.
Does he work with Dennis Quaid all the time?
Day After Tomorrow.
Is Dennis Quaid in that too?
Yeah, he's his dad.
Because he's in Independence Day.
Dennis Quaid's not in Independence Day.
As the drunk.
Day. You're that Randy Quaid.
Randy Quaid.
Randy Quaid. Big difference.
Randy Quaid.
Randy Quaid is in Christmas Vacation, and he's widowy, the funniest guy on the planet.
And he's also, he's gone far off the...
Like, the fall of both Chevy Chase and Randy Quaid need to be studied in the lab.
Well, no, I think Randy Quaid's closer to, like, Nick Nolte. Like, is that right with the guy with the big teeth who was gone, who talks about peanut butter?
Gary Busey.
Gary Busey. That's the one who's like gone in a different direction of human society. And Randy Quaid has too. He like was like squatting in a house. I'm not trying to make light of someone's probably very tragic and unfortunate situation, but they were squatters. Now he's like a Trump. It's a whole thing. Anyway, welcome to Podcast of the Rings. I'm Jessica Lynn Verdi, my co-host, friend, as always, Ben Goddard. Doing the good thing here. Do you think we're changing lives doing this podcast?
You know, I wonder about that. Like, I'd love, you know, everyone would love a bigger audience, but I'd love to have people listen to these reexaminations, because especially now where, you know, I got into something where someone called a TV show content, and I'm really trying not to use that word anymore because, like, it's such a business term. Like, I'm not David Zaslav. Like, I'm not Bob Iger. Like, I need to stop viewing shows as content because it is art. Whether you like it or not, like, that's totally subjective and totally fine. Or is it objective? Subjective. Subjective. I was
subjective,
right.
Subjective, yeah. Objectively, it's art, though.
Yes, objectively, it is art. And it is someone's creation. And I think it was so funny, like, everyone was piling on Madam Web, and, you know, to a certain extent, rightfully so. And sometimes it's fun to just trash a bad movie. And there's a really well-respected, and, like, he's one of the OG YouTube movie reviewers, like, just kind of grandfathered into the new algorithm, gets views no matter what. Same as Chris Stuckman. And he recently, like, his passion is movies, and he decided to direct a movie because he's really successful and has the funds to do it. And he was like, you know what? Everyone's been trashing the movie. If you want to go watch one of those reviews, feel free. There's plenty of them out there. I'm not going to. I know how hard it is to make a small independent movie, let alone a studio-handled blockbuster with a bunch of A-listers. So I'm just not going to do it. Like, I think everyone tried their best. Were there some misfires? Of course there were. That happens in almost every movie. Very few movies. It is rare to get a very good movie. Like, it's a hard thing to do. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is so boring. It's like, if you want someone to trash a movie, there's a mil, like, type in Madam Web on any social media, on anything ever, and you'll get some kind of funny thing about it. And, you know, like, there's plenty out there. This guy had, like, a nuanced take about, like, you know what, it's hard to make movies. Maybe we should go, like, easier on them. Criticism is absolutely fair, but just, like, absolutely, you know, dump trucking a movie, it's like, it's a little overboard. And
well, it's also like low-hanging fruit too.
It is. It's like, of course it was gonna be like, you knew it was gonna be bad. Like, the marketing knew it was gonna be bad. Like, everyone was leaning in of like, Ghost, you're gonna love this movie. You're gonna see it twice. You're gonna love it so much. It's like, they knew what was coming, and they got their money as much as they could of like opening weekend of like, you know what, we gotta go see Madam Web. We're gonna have a few drinks, you know. There's probably gonna be, you know, In the same way, there's like, you know, rowdy cat showings or, you know, the room showings, you know, where people are like yelling at the screen, no, I know, you know, yeah, like totally. midnight showings. Madame Web seems to be on that track. We'll see if it, you know, has that cultural staple. It might just
is
be
it,
like a.
Is it that bad, though? You know, or is it like that egregious? Because that's what like Cats was like, I actually took a lot of umbrage with all the people that decided this is just going to be a cult thing now that we throw spoons at. I the thing that made The Room that was it traveled the backwaters for a long time until that happened. And then people just arbitrarily going, nope, Cats is bad. We're all going to watch it. You know, but at the same time, we did all go to see it to watch the spectacle of how bad it was. So my question is, it was Madame Web that bad or was it
I
just
still haven't seen it,
good?
So I really can't decide. I did.
You didn't see your girl?
I didn't. I know. I need to go see her. She's rude. Both of them, both Dakota and Sydney, are very disappointed in me.
Oh, Sydney in it?
Ugh. I've gotten a lot of text about it, and I just like, babe, I'm going to go see it. Trust me.
Be like Matt Rife and just be like, I just am a little too busy right now.
It's a little too busy, and I just feel like everyone that like hates you is like jealous of you. Did you hear the response to that when he said that?
No, I didn't hear about this at all.
Like, and he was on a podcast. He was like, you know, just internet stuff. Like, he said the most basic take of, like, if you're on the internet hating, like, what else can you be doing with your time? I'm like, oh, my God. One, shut up. You made your bones on the internet, Matt. Like, you can't bite the hand that feeds you. And then also, he's like, anyone I've learned. And it's like, you know, he says it, like, so philosophically. Like, I've learned that anyone that hates you is, like, jealousy. And it's one, that's the most basic 2001 Natasha Bedingfield takes ever. And two, the response was like immediately the host didn't let him breathe. She's like, so everyone that hates Osama bin Laden is jealous of him?
No. I love that you said, didn't even let him breathe.
Didn't even like give him a chance to even like, yeah, I said that. I made that point. It's like, nope. And so shout out to them.
That's some A+. Speaking of good hosting, we just started, what is it? The drinking competition on Netflix. We've been watching all the like competitive. This is what I was going to ask you too. Like, would you call reality TV art or is that content?
I think that's content because it is like, it's so manipulative. Like my sister went on Parental Control. That old, like, MTV, you remember that one? It was an MTV dating show.
Hardly. Oh, my God, yes.
Remember, like, they would, like, the boyfriend or girlfriend would sit with their partner's parents. And they'd go on, like, two dates. And they'd be like, oh, okay, I want to choose new girlfriend or I want to stay with my current girlfriend or boyfriend.
Wow.
And she was on that. And they were like, okay, this is your idea of a perfect date. This is your idea of, you know, where you want to go, what you like, what you dislike. And so it's just like even stuff like that. And granted, you know, reality TV has come so far and is so much bigger now. Like everything is scripted.
So like she didn't even have a say in what like her. That's
and even like interesting. I remember when I moved to L.A., I worked at Saddle Ranch, you know, the famous Western bar on Sunset. And right after I got there, they had just filmed the first and only season of the reality show. And so I was talking with a lot of coworkers.
It was called the reality show?
No. The reality show for Saddle Ranch. Like they did like
I
a
didn't realize
like
there
a Vanderpump Rules for Saddle Ranch. Yeah, there's a Saddle Ranch show. It's not very good. I remember watching a few episodes because my friend that got hired was in it. Like he wasn't like a big part in it. But like he had like the budding romance storyline with him and another bartender.
Sinbad asked me to be in his at the end, which was very nice. I was his server. It was very nice.
Nice.
But carry on.
But yeah, just like they would tell me like, oh, you said this to so and so. What'd you think about that? Like, what did I say? I don't like one of the servers literally got fired off the show for not being dramatic enough because she wouldn't like start arguments and stuff.
Yeah, I believe that that's the majority of. So that's what I'm like. It's interesting that you just bring up content in general because I'm taking I'm having a hard time with the term in general. I don't like that I create content. Why can't I just create art? But then if I'm spending half my time making social media content, then that's what I do. So I'm just, it's interesting that there are people, I really reject that, that are wanting to call TV shows content in general. But yeah, so we've been watching, the reason I thought of it is we've been watching their like mixologist competitive show, and their host is named Tone Bell, and he is the best I've ever seen.
Phenomenal.
Like, clearly an improv dude, just slick as hell. He's like, you're wondering why I'm standing here. It's because Anthony Anderson wasn't available. Like, he's killing it. And like, he was telling the contestants, we'll see you tomorrow. And then looks dead into the camera. It's like, and I'll see you guys in 5 seconds. And it's just really great. So
a great host really makes or break a show.
So that's even a further circle back to the point. We're fucking great hosts. I don't think anybody out there with the podcast is doing what we're doing, or we're like in that. I do believe we're in that upper echelon of like really good content makers.
I think we are too, because like the fact that we're 11 minutes into this episode, we haven't mentioned the word Lord of the Rings once.
I'm good with it. Good with it. But like, but that's, I will say, that's the part, those are the people I want to listen to too.
Exactly. You know? Like I listen to Blank Check, and like they have like a running bit, and Blank Check, you know, they talk about, you know, movies and like directors, filmographies and stuff like that. And like their whole bit is like an hour into the show, they're going to start talking about the movie.
Oh,
and
that's
it literally happens. Like it's a real thing. And
that's great.
Like that's where I got the idea to do a quote at the beginning. Cause they do like a quote, but they'll put, you know, the word podcast into it somewhere. Like, you know, The Matrix, when he's like, I know Kung Fu. He's like, I know podcast. Like,
that's just good. Like,
it's really great. But I do love talking about Middle Earth and Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. But just like, I love the tangents that we go on too. Like the one we just went on. It's great.
Yeah, I think ignoring that these works exist in modern times would be a mistake, right?
Yeah.
Like, do they help us reflect on what we're going through today? Where are we coming from when we're talking about those things? I think those are all runways leading up to it too. And also on the other side of it, as we continue to self-congratulate ourselves, now that I'm producing podcasts, it's not a skill that comes naturally to people to be able to like repartee, repost and build on somebody's idea, let them have. It's, I don't even know. I know I had it naturally, but it came with improv, right? That like allowed me to go, okay, well, what do you have to say? You're probably going to be funnier than I am. Let's go, you know?
Yeah.
But a lot of people are not used to. It's just not, it's just something you have to get good at, you know?
It is. It is something you have to get good at. You know, Ninja said it best, get good. I think that was the title of his book. I think Ninja wrote a book and that was the title of his book.
Ninja for President. Anyway, so we're watching. I can't tangent off that. I don't want to. You brought up Matt Rife. That was pushing it. And now we're at Ninja. I cannot.
I know.
No, it's great. These men are just really changing the landscape of content creation out there.
Yeah, there's like not enough room for like white men out there.
You know, I just to talk about Matt for 2 seconds before I even like, maybe I saw one of his stand-ups months prior, but like, the first time he came onto my radar was him talking to like Conan or somebody about like his overnight success. He was just rejected as a host of his show that he created by people that were sponsoring his show as they were going to South by Southwest. They're like, they said to his partner, we'll take you. We don't want Matt. But if Matt flies his way to South by Southwest, he can still do the show. And then like, that's heartbreaking, right? It's interesting though, too. What did that company that was sponsoring them know about, could sense about Matt at that point? Do you know what I mean? Like no, we don't like that guy. But like Matt was at the hotel telling his friend like, man, I got this like TikTok all queued up, but like, what's the point? You know, he's still there with his small chin before it got plastic surgery, and his friend's
no,
like,
no,
it's one of my favorite roasts on the internet. That's actually what makes me care about Matt Rife, is his plastic surgeon roasting him. Anyway, his friend's like, no, man, just post it. And that's the post that goes viral. When, you know, he's like reaming the person about being an American Airlines luggage person, you know, like it made it. He was like talking about consistency, and it was like a really nice message for someone like myself, who's like, sometimes I feel like I'm just throwing in, like my talent into the ether for no one to see. And he was expressing that that was like where he was at the bottom of the barrel, you know, trying to scrape back any sense of self. And it took because he decided to post one more thing. So I was like rooting for the guy because like that's a good success story. And then he goes and blows it all up. But he's still successful. So fuck
that's
me,
why,
right?
Like I literally made that TikTok that like got it was crazy. It was one of the TikToks that got like muted. I think it got like 50 views. Granted, I usually only get like 300, but it was weird that it got like no traffic at all. It was about Timothy Chalamet, and about how Timothy Chalamet obviously has like a female skewing audience. Like everyone sure. loves him. Like he's cute. But he's like a really good actor. And before, it's so funny. Like every comment on every Dune edit, it was like, oh, he had to lock in after Wonka. I'm like, no, Wonka's who he is. That is him. He is a nerdy theater kid. Like, he's not Lisan Al Gaib. He is Wonka. Like,
he had to lock
ladies and gentlemen, like, listen up and talk. Scratch sit down. That. Reverse it. Like, that's
and
who Timothy Chalamet
is. He's not that good at it, but he's adorable. Yeah, no.
Stop it. He is good at it. Don't you dare.
I'm saying in that movie, he's like, 75% Wonka. He's got some of the charm. He doesn't have like
if
the.
If Gene Wilder is 100%, then yeah, I'll take a 75 to 80%. Like
I did. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying. Okay, you know what? Maybe I should. It may be unnecessary ad lib there. Okay, I'll walk it back.
Thank you. I appreciate.
I'm
that.
A Timmy fan. Okay.
You said I'll get. I forgot my point. Oh no, it's because like. There's an interview that I clipped where he's like, oh, remember this thing in Call of Duty? It was like a modded controller on the FAL. And like right then I was like, this is how you do it. This is how, because every single guy my age that played Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 knows exactly what you're talking about. And it like that was, you know, the biggest shooter at the time, the sure. Biggest shooting game at the time. And I was like, that is
I remember
such,
this post.
Yeah. And I was like, that is such a perfect deep cut of how you get your male audience skewed in a healthy way. We're like, and you watch, go find that TikTok, and there are so many dudes like, okay, I like this guy now. And it's that easy. Just like, oh, instead of just being like, oh, domestic abuse, am I right, guys? LOL, which is like the opening of Matt Rife's freaking stand-up. It's like, I don't know why he was so unsatisfied with like his gender statistics of like who liked him, but... I'm sure he's doing fine. Like, you know, comedians, they always find a way to bounce back. Like, but it's just, it was such a weird, unnecessary swerve that like, I'm more confused than angry about it. I was like, that's a bad joke. But like,
and
why
let it be
you-
a bad joke. But let it be a bad joke. You know what I yeah. mean? Like, also like Netflix, no one stopped this. That's kind of like also, but again, they're let, you know, he's not Dave Chappelle. That could just go up there and talk for 2 hours,
no.
right?
And like, maybe that's what he thought, and that's a bold thing to think. Because, like, he's not even Louis C.K., who's, like, you know, no. still out there doing his thing. And it's just, like,
It was the doubling down, though. It was, yeah. That's not funny. So, like, anybody that talks to you about comedy nowadays, show me the guys that are punching up. You know what yeah. I mean? Those guys are actually doing smart comedy. If you like lowbrow comedy, I'll go for the low-hanging fruit. I love it once it's fallen on the floor. Sometimes it's the best.
Yeah, but I love good Madam Web jokes. If they're good, if you have something new to say about low-hanging fruit, it can be funny. It can be really funny. But
and
like,
sometimes you also need to laugh about it. Like you just yeah. sometimes you need that. Like even if you're losing an audience to like they say that you have to have an audience laughing every 20 seconds if you're on stage. The pressure's on.
Wild.
That's a huge amount of pressure. So I don't envy somebody in that position. It's the one artistic endeavor I have yet to even try.
No,
is
never.
Comedy.
Never. I'll never have
I'm
it like a type
thinking about
five.
It, but it's scary. It's scary as fuck. So I'll give them this much credit, right? Go for the low-hanging fruit and then come back up. Come back. Because you can't sustain that. The blue and the trash jokes, that's, the audience is like, okay. You get one laugh and then it starts trickling down from there.
Yeah.
So is Ring of Power low-hanging fruit?
I don't think so. And I, you know, to circle back to our long forgotten point of like the difference that we're making is that I just hope people are revisiting the show because I'm finding I'm enjoying it a lot more. I know we pick on the Harfoots a lot. And guess who's not in this episode, baby? It's the Harfoots.
It's a better episode for it. It really is.
It really is. And I don't like it's so hard to separate, you know, the actors from like the story they're telling. But the story you're telling isn't interesting. It is the definition and literally on screen wheel spinning. You are spinning your wheels.
Wow.
And the fact that at the end of the episode, we came up with a better way to have the stranger tag along with the caravan in like 30 seconds than the showrunners did in like their 2 years of prep is crazy. Like,
this is so easy. Nervous about this. Remember when before you were our official host, you came on to talk about how Rings of Power was finishing the season without the showrunners for season two. That's going to be interesting too. I just remembered that.
It's going to be a lot, and I'm really curious to see because we've seen like the MCU is not infallible anymore. Like they have taken some hits in this last 2 years. Basically, you know, since Endgame, like everyone was really happy with some of the shows on Disney Plus, and then you know the movie started to come out, and people were like, "Oh, like Shang-Chi, great." You know, Black Panther 2. Great. And then, you know, Ant-Man. This is how you're introducing, you know, Kang. Granted, Jonathan Majors is no longer in the MCU, but we didn't know that at the time. But just, like, it started to kind of lose steam. And, you know, Captain Marvel with, like, you know, hey, like it or hate it, it made $1 billion. The first one made $1 billion. Numbers don't lie. And then you put in, like, what's her name from Miss Marvel, who's great, the little girl, and it doesn't do well. And it's just like, so nothing is guaranteed anymore. Like, nothing is promised. Like, Mission Impossible, one of the best action franchises on the planet, didn't do that well. Granted, it was because of Barbenheimer. Like, you know, they should have moved. They should have moved out of the way, and they didn't.
Didn't they lose the IMAX, too?
Yeah, remember I was telling you about that. He was like, okay, well, then we get all the Dolby screens. Like, if we can't have IMAX, we get all the Dolby screens or something. And so it's just like, nothing is infallible. Nothing is guaranteed in this business when it comes to numbers, when it comes to viewership, box office, whatever it may be. So it's like, they need to come with the heat in this second season. Because I'm sure there's a lot of people that, you know, there's a lot of like people that, yeah, I'm excited for season two. I think a majority of people are probably like, you know what? There's some good stuff in season one. There are some plot lines I'm interested in, you know, Aron Dir, Ellen Deal, like all these people like, yeah, I want to see what happens with Galadriel. So I want to see. But I feel like by episode 4, 5, maybe if it's not there, people are going to stop dropping off because there's so much, not content, but just other hour-long dramas you can be watching. You're going up against House of Dragons in the same year. Again? It's coming out this year.
So, like, I was just thinking about this. I stopped watching Loki. Love Loki. I love it. I will watch Tom Hiddleston do anything. And then you add, you know, my other Owen Wilson, it's all great. There's nothing, it's all gravy. It should be great. And it wasn't. And you know, I'm not like a very, for as much as like I have shows where I analyze TV shows like The Orville and stuff like that, I don't want to find fault in something.
No.
But these shows make it hard to find the reason I should keep giving them my attention to the point now where I'm watching, instead of Loki and finishing it, I'm watching a mixology show that I couldn't give a shit about.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, I guess that's why, like once we find our audience too, because we have some wonderful audience members that are like really engaged with what we do, it's just a matter of them like wanting this content and eventually finding it.
Yeah.
Because you're right, and I think that will happen when people realize that Rings of Power 2, Season 2 is coming out. They'll go, oh, yeah, I have it. I should rewatch the series again.
Amazon, kind of like Amazon's going to dump money into this ad campaign for sure.
Oh,
like they're going to spare no expense, John Hammond style.
Oh, what do you mean? Oh, like he's going to create.
It's just what he says, spare no expense.
I forgot. Yeah. So I'm sure people are going to be joining us when they're like on the rewatch of that too. So this episode opens with the dream sequence, you know, just to jump ahead a little bit. The queen regent shows Galadriel the Palantir, and you were so right. Like, it only shows the destruction of Numenor.
I was so excited because there's so much of this season that I had forgotten. I've only watched it once. I didn't even rewatch any like clips or really anything on YouTube. Like, and so revisiting this season, I was like, oh yeah, they're right. They do have a Palantir. Like, I forgot about that. What is she going to see? And then the queen is like, you haven't touched this one before. Yeah, because it's a kaleidoscope. It's just like a pictogram thing that you had when you were a little kid. You just, like a little five, it's just Vine. It's the same thing. Tidal wave. Ellen Deal, come over here. Oh, tidal wave.
But how much better would it have been to give Galadriel a glimpse of, like, what could happen to the Southland?
What could happen to the Southland? Like, have show the waterfall falling down and, you know, or something. Have like,
or there's a Smith hammering to the elves.
Yeah, like have like the leave, you know, going dark. I don't think they've shown that yet, but that could be a little precursor. Or, you know, someone forging something, like a betrayal of some kind, like her, you know, crying, like waking up, you know, when she wakes up in the water, like crying, I think she does, like in Lothlorien or Rivendell. So it's just like there's so much they could have shown, but just like, no, we're just going to show you the abridged version of something you saw 10 minutes ago. And I was like, oh, okay. So it's not a seeing stone.
The queen could have told her that.
Yeah.
Like, the queen could say, do you not think that I am concerned about my, you know, whatever? And although I will say the way that they show the Palantir getting activated is very cool.
Very well done.
I loved it. We see Aeri and she falls in love with the total dork from Numenor, aka the sun, whatever his name is. There's, you know, I gotta give people credit on the internet. Very little. But some people like ship them hard.
Really?
Yes.
That's like wild, man.
I know. Somehow when we were doing the cover of it before, like we found that internet group that's like A, loves Halbrand, and B, like, ships Aeryan and the dorky prince dude, you know, whatever his name is.
You said it, and, like, I will begrudgingly agree with you when she's, like, when he's like, oh, let's clean this up together, and whoever does it better will buy dinner, and she's like, I don't go to dinner with strange men. He's like, okay, if I see one, I'll let you know. That's a good line. That's a good line. I can't hate on that.
Like, he booked the job on that line.
He did.
I'm telling you.
He earned a first date. I will say that. I don't think they have any chemistry later on in the show, but that line is good.
Their chemistry later on in the show is, you hate elves, so do I. You know, like, it's not great. They're not great people, I don't think.
This is the thing, you know, like, we said it last week where it's just like, no one's happy. This is supposed to be a good time in Numenor. And granted, they do kind of call it out where the guy's like, one elf shows up and you guys lose your mind and go full, they're going to take our jobs. Like, they literally say that in their show. Like, they go full South Park. Like,
whoa. Wait, so the Numenoreans are Trumpers?
They literally say that, unless I misheard. They literally say,
he does. He totally does.
Yeah, he says
does.
Someone that can't tire and doesn't sleep and is ageless is going to take my job. And it's like, they literally take our jobs. It's like, oh,
I know,
great.
The businessmen are like, I do want elves here. That'd be great. And also, by the way, the elves don't want your fucking jobs.
They don't.
They're good. But yeah, it's very funny. So let's see. Galadriel gets thrown in jail for going toe-to-toe with the queen. Sedition.
Yeah, and this scene is good with Halbrand kind of, you get a little, this is what I was talking about that we should have gotten in the pub with him, is that he's like, he manipulates Galadriel of like how to get on the queen. Like, okay, you threatened to overthrow her kingdom. You threatened to steal a ship. You did all of these things in front of the court, and she didn't blink. The minute you brought up her father, she throws you in jail. So, what's going on with that? And it is annoying that he has to literally lead her by the nose of like what is going on. Like, this is a 1,000-year-old goddess being. Like, can we not? It's, I understand that she is blinded by her vengeance and rage, sure, but just like, there's only so far that I can believe that this is Galadriel. Like,
yep,
at a certain point, she's just a bad character. Yeah, yeah, she's just this might as well be like Lindsay Lohan in the early 2000s. Like what is going on right now?
Crotch shot and all.
Like, it's crazy where it's just like, I don't know the point they're trying to make, because you can only make it so many times with the same character. Like,
yeah, because like the moment she's at court and brute forcing her way, right?
Yeah.
Trying to get, that's the lesson. Don't show me the beat again in the next episode.
Yeah, where she literally like has a private meeting with the queen and does the same thing again. It's just like, okay, like have her take like a deep breath and like, okay, that didn't work. What am I missing here? Where is the king? What, why are you the queen regent? What is going on? And like, have her figure, granted, you can still have Sauron like, oh, maybe you should say this. Like, you can have a good Halbrand moment along with her not being a total fucking moron. Like, yeah, she doesn't, totally, she doesn't have to like be clueless about, yeah, what is happening.
When she has the moment of like, what? Really? I didn't think about that. I'm like, girl, you're not that dumb. Like, no wonder, you know, I have no problem with Galadriel who can scale a wall. I have no problem, nope, with battle Galadriel. I'm with you. I have a problem with dumb Galadriel. I do.
It's like, she can be more than one thing. Like, Elrond doesn't just have to be this, oh, he's a crafty diplomat that, you know, he just, and I love that part about him. That's really great. But Elrond can also kick a lot of ass.
Yeah.
And he does, totally, so quite often throughout his entire immortal life.
Yeah.
Like, we said it in the Lord of the Rings rewatch and stuff. Like, it's insane the things Elrond survived in his immortal life. Like, he's been through the gauntlet of elven life.
And emotionally, and, too. Yes. Like, just like physically and emotionally.
And so it's just like, have our character learn these things with herself. Like, and, you know, have Elendil, like, give her, like, a stern look, like, don't do that, or something.
Well, he does try to stop her.
Yeah.
But, like, to know, it's all, that was the most staged thing I'd ever seen, too, where, like, Elendil literally is just reading lines, the actor, like, Galadriel, please stop. Like, I felt like I was doing a play,
yeah,
in college.
He has to, like, stay open to the audience. Like,
yes, it was that. That's 100%
how I felt. That 45 degree angle, you have to stay on stage even though you're talking to someone like face to face.
Face out. Yes. Open up. Yeah, no, totally. It's rough. Some fun things happen though. You're totally right. We get this like sexy, you know, thing from Halbrand. He's like, I don't know, you went about this all wrong. Should have done it in episode 2 or 3. That should have, yes, happened. Episode 3. And then I still don't quite understand how she escaped, but she escapes the prison, and that's how she, like, jumps to the tower to get to the, yeah, dad and whatever. Anyway, another thing we talked about, too, is even though the Numenorean guy's armor looks weird, the Queen Regent's costuming.
Her costuming, really, like, nice. Their costuming is good. Their armor looks really weird for some reason. It's, like, they the just like, they literally did costumes and then they're just like, just throw a breastplate on them. Okay. Yeah. Well, it doesn't fit. It doesn't matter.
I think they tried to do this like hippie, you know, we're like a beach culture thing. I don't know, but it just doesn't work. It works on the queen though. Yeah. We do go back to the dwarves, which is awesome. Some really great, fun stuff there. We get Disa, Durin's wife, being really shady.
But
showing us her side of shadiness.
Let's finish. I want to finish Numenor real quick.
Oh, okay.
Just like Isildur, like, flunks out of sailing school.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I got to skip ahead. Do they ever, like, mention, like, what he's daydreaming of so much so that, like, one, we said it again. We said, like, everyone looks too normal in Numenor. Like, I'm not saying, like, anyone's like, unattractive, but just like, these are the best of the best of the best of the best. And right. they should look like that. And they don't, except for Elendil and this boat captain. There is a shot against the sunset for this man, and I would follow him into battle. I don't like being on boats, but I'd become a sailor for that man. Like,
maybe that's why Isildur's friends are so upset. They're like, I want to hang out with him.
Yeah. And it is a weird thing that, like, one untied knot and he fires all three of them. Just like...
Yeah, I forgot that didn't happen now. It happened... I forgot that this happened this episode, not episode three.
Yeah.
I wonder if he fires all three of them because they tried to cover for him.
Maybe, but it just seems like so plot-driven where they're just like, we need to have this... It just seems like a hat on a hat where it's like, I know we need to learn more about Isildur because of who he is, but not like this. I don't know what I want from Isildur. Definitely not for people to call him Isil. No.
Isil, please.
No. No. I'm sorry, people. People have many names in Middle Earth. They don't have nicknames.
We just don't care about him enough to have Isil, you know, like...
The Grey Pilgrim, Stormcrow, Gandalf, Mithrandir, Strider, like, all these names work. I'm not calling Legolas Legs, like...
let's go Leggy!
Yeah. And so, I don't know, I forgot about that, and I did not like it at all.
No, it's totally... fair. I do feel bad for his friends. I think it just is only there to up the emotional stakes. And, you know, Isildur is being, like, really selfish. Like, he didn't think about what his actions would do to his friends. We're still a little confused why it had repercussions on them.
Yes.
His friend, though, the dark curly hair guy, he does say, your dreams about the true Numenor and the West. So, like, that's what's distracting him. I don't know what he means by the true Numenor. Like, is his future calling to him where he's going to be the king? You know, that is really uncertain. I really hope that they don't ignore that they set this weird thing up. And just now he's in, you know, I don't know. But they did. That's what they did say. Like, this dream of yours, the West is Numenor, or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what they say. Antimo doing the best, though, when he's like, I'm going to throw up. I need the bucket. He's great.
Yeah.
He's so adorable.
And I wonder if, like, them kicking the bucket with open-toed shoes is, like, a reference to, like, Viggo Mortensen breaking his toe. I wonder if that was, like, a little Easter egg, now that I think about it.
I think it was.
Yeah.
It's a nice little nod if that's the case, because that's fun. That's cute.
So, like, after Galadriel and the Queen see the exact same thing, the Queen's like, okay, we need to do something about the Southlands, so we are going to escort you with a big battalion to the Southlands to rescue our kinsmen.
The leaves of the white petals of the tree are falling as Galadriel's about to leave. Yeah.
And the tiniest tree just starts. It is. It is a very good ending. I don't like that they have, like, a draft. Like, not even a draft, like a volunteer. National Guard, guardsmen.
I don't blame them, though, because, like, it is like, you want to leave Numenor to help what we think is a problem? Like,
they don't have a military?
I think what they're trying to illustrate by that is, like, you don't have to go. Not a lot of people feel this way about wanting to go to the West. And so rather than anger people and make them go, if they die, they made that choice.
But the first three people that volunteer have nothing. Like, this is like, it's just like American military where it's just like, oh, the people that are the most disenfranchised and have no other choice go to the military because they'll pay them. Like, that's literally what they're saying in this moment is that, like, hey, the first three people to volunteer in this moment is Antimo, Isildur, and the third friend that I can't think of their name. And it's just like, they literally say, you've ruined my life. I have nothing. I've been dreaming about being a sailor my entire life, now I can't. I don't have a trade. I don't have a skill. I don't have a craft. I don't have a little button on my tunic. So I guess I'll just go off to war. Like, it's not a great message.
Whoa, I didn't even think about that, Ben.
Like, it's,
although
it's,
you pointed out that the guy who's like the
the politician dude has this like covered, like, so I kind of like that, where it's just like he, you know,
he's
makes
the master of everything,
master of like a jack of all trades. And you know, like in that moment where they're talking, even though like he's saying it as he's shaking hands, like, you got to deal with the little people here. Am I right? And it's like, you shouldn't say that out loud, like as you're shaking the hands of
like the guy, the
local baker.
Like, the baker's like, fuck you, dude.
Right? Like, it's like Beauty and the Beast, where she's like, Belle's walking around the town. She's like, in this small provincial town, fuck you, Belle. I'm just trying to make a living over here.
One of the best original OG videos is, hey girl, hey girl, hey girl, hey girl, hey girl. I told you it was a wig. Yeah, some of the best internets that was happening with that.
But yeah, it is just like weird visual language to be like, hey, be like, hey, we've got our Navy. Who wants to join up? Like, who feels this way? And the fact that Isildur, who's been dreaming about the West, who's been daydreaming so much so that he got fired from his job, isn't the first to volunteer?
He's a pussy.
You can only have so many people be in their midlife crisis. You can't have Isildur and Halbrand both be like, oh man, I just don't know what to do with my life. It reminds me of that movie Waiting, where like the guy, the trainee who's like been silenced the whole movie, like goes on his big rant and he's like, tells Justin Long, like, oh, I don't know what to do with my life. Join the fucking army or something. I don't know. That's literally what they're saying. It's like, I guess if you have no other options, you can join the army. Like, did the army sponsor the end of this show or something? Like,
to sign up for your local army. Go army.
Right?
Oh, that's
it was like those really old Marines commercials where he was literally like, there's like a Marine like fighting. I don't know if anyone remembers this, but the craziest Marine commercial where he'd be like fighting a lava monster. Like, it was the wildest.
Like a video game, kind of.
It was literally a video game trailer. And then at the end, he'd be like in the Marine formal wear with the sword and be like, join the Marines today. You're going to fight magma monsters.
What?
It's like they were literally advertising to high school kids of like, hey, here's your favorite video game. You can do that every day in the Marines.
Lava monster.
Lava monster. Do you like God of War? Well, you can be the God of War in the Marines.
Assassin.
Yeah.
Assassin's Creed. Yikes. Yikes on bikes. I mean, that's also half my problem with, even though I like Call of Duty, it kind of it's not great.
No,
it kind of desensitizes you to killing a certain type of person. It's not great, but you bring up a really good point. It's like, this is not some dutiful, wonderful, amazing thing you're doing. These guys have nothing else going for them. That's really messed up.
Or they should have, like, all three of them should have been like, I wanted to sail because I want to help. I've heard about, like, I'm listening to Gladriel say that, like, the Southlands needs help. Like, but instead, you have the whole episode being like, oh, fuck the elves and, you know, fuck the Southlands. Why don't we just live on this island? And so you just have a bunch of people begrudgingly raising their hand out of like social peer pressure, basically, at the end of the episode. So I'm just like, I don't feel inspired by this at all.
Yeah, Galadriel didn't change their mind.
Yeah.
It was the queen that made the decision, which I'm sure. Yeah, why didn't we see charming Galadriel? Or, you know, maybe Galadriel isn't charming, but because we love Galadriel from the movies. Say Galadriel one more time, Jessica. But
one more.
But something about her is captivating. Let us see her captivate.
Or let Halbrand make a speech somewhere of just like, yeah, like, my people really need you in the Southlands. I'm begging for a morsel of like intrigue and like, oh, you know, as much as I don't like Galadriel being dumb, I loved that scene with Halbrand. Just that tiny little morsel that I can survive off of, oh, there's a hint of Sauron right there. Like, manipulating her of like how to get to the queen, how to push her buttons. Like, with a side of Chianti and some fava beans. But yeah, so there is some really good stuff in Numenor. I feel like I don't mean to sound so negative, but it's just like, I see it's like, it's reminds me of like Jupiter Ascending, the Wachowski movie that was like the big follow-up of The Matrix, where I see everything they were trying to do in this movie. I see it, and just sometimes they zigged when they should have zagged, and that's what this show is doing. It's like, oh my God, you're right there. At least for me. Some people could love every single story beat of this, and I always say, I'm very jealous of you. I want to love everything, like, so much. And especially anything Middle Earth related, but just like, I see what they're trying to do, what they're going for, and you're right there. You are just like reaching for the goal line, and you're getting hit at the one for me, at least. Like, it, and so it's, I'm not negative. It's just like, I see what this show can be and what I want it to be. And I see that, like, you have the actors, you have the set dressing, you have the budget. It's just right there. And so, yeah. I ran too much.
No, you're doing very well. Goodbye. So
goodbye.
Next, we get to the dwarves. Disa owns. Not only is she like fucking lying to Elrond, like successful.
I didn't realize she got her leg out. She's on a little leg as she's walking with that guy.
She's killing it.
She's killing it, like everything. Like when she just automatically, like, when he's like, "Oh, well, if he's mining this, why didn't he take his mining equipment?" And it would take 2 days for him to get there. But you're preparing dinner, like takes a long, deep breath, and just like, he didn't take it because that's not how you mine it, dumbass. And
bitch.
So your little noob ass would take 2 days. My grown ass dwarf professional husband does it in 20 minutes. Any other questions? Like, just comes right back, and like, that's what you want in a partner right there. Just no matter what, has got your back. Like, what is it? It's protect in public and punish in private. Whereas like, she might not even be agreeing with what Durin's doing, but on the surface, you don't sell him out to the enemies. Like, you know, the Godfather said, you know, you don't argue with the family in front of the public. You can argue, you can disagree with a thing, and we'll discuss it later in private, and you can scream and yell, but front-facing, you got your partner, you got your family's back.
Like you do it with the kids, too, right? Yeah. Mom said that? All right, go away. You know, like, you have to be on the same page. Granted, now, Disa does agree with Durin. Disa does learn, Elrond does his eye thing and figures
what
out
what do elf eyes see.
Yeah, exactly. They're taking the hobbits to Isengard.
Yeah,
he can tell that they're having a conversation out. So, you know, protect in public and also tell your secrets in public. They're talking about the Mithril right there on the bridge. And
yeah,
Elrond goes to find Durin, and you know, one thing leads to another. We get introduced to Mithril, and we learn that Disa was the one who found it, actually. And in order to reveal the secret, Durin makes Elrond swear on the stone that it doesn't pass his ears. And he gets a piece of Mithril, too. And it's kind of cool. It's a little obvious that they're, like, making it glow, but it looks great.
It does look great. It's a little too much like this is the Ring of Power, where he's like completely mesmerized by it. I don't know. How'd you feel about that, where he's like, no, in our language it'd be Mithril? I was like, ugh. Okay.
I think you're looking at a brand new metal that is something else. I think you're going to be like taken with it. If it genuinely is beautiful. And elves appreciate that stuff. He didn't like fully forget himself, you know?
Yeah.
He did almost forget to give it to Durin. He did like Mithril, like he almost put it in his mouth or something. There was definitely a little bit of like, he's like.
Oh my God. No one is happier that we are no longer rated PG than Jessica Lynn Verdi.
I couldn't do it anymore, guys.
She always complain about like the small, like I remember like, on the animated Hobbit or animated Lord of the Rings, I think I cussed when like Gollum throws the boulder at Sam. Yeah. She's like, oh, come on, Ben, I gotta timestamp this. But meanwhile, she's like, he doesn't deep throat the Mithril.
At that time, we were still adhering to the rules, and now the ropes are off. Because I don't want to edit it anymore.
But it is very well done of like, hey, it's perilous to mine. And like I said during our watch along, it's like, I wish they would have shown us. I like that the mine collapses. I think that, like, you know, right there, it shows you why it's perilous. But like, I'd love to see, like, what does it mean to be perilous? Is it because like the mine is the mine shaft is shaky? Are they, you know, upside down in straps, like on a cliffside, you know, finding the ores? Because like Elrond like moves a curtain back and there's a vein right there, just like standing next to him. So I was like, okay, so it seems pretty easy to mine.
What are we mining, bro? Right? Like, we don't even see them mining. But Disa, who was like all, you know, protector, was ends up, you know, we get to see her singing and she's making a plea to the rocks. Truly amazing. I remember when I first watched it and I was like, really take, they were just letting this woman go. You know, they were letting her be everything she could be, and they cast perfectly. And then, you know, Disa's like, he would have been in that shaft if you hadn't gone sneaking down there. So we're actually super grateful to you, you know? And yeah, they did try to kind of show us that it's dangerous that way. This is more interesting, though. So Elrond and Durin have like this moment where it's like, hey, forgive your father, even though he's like trying to shut down the Mithril stuff. And like, you know, you'd be more grateful to have your dad than not have him. And then Durin goes to talk to his dad. And there's like a weird moment where the dad's not talking to him. Durin should be dead.
We said that in the watch along. Durin should be dead because it would
Durin
fit
the second.
Yeah, Durin the first. Or is he
the first? I think he's the second.
So, oh, is our Durin the third?
Ours is Durin the third, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I'll take your word.
There's four Durins. What's interesting, too, is Durin's supposed to be a reincarnation. So the fact that, like, there are two Durins at one time is also inconsistent with Silmarillion. But, like, we just overlook that.
And that would be fine that he wasn't the king at the time. But, like, it would have been such a good story beat that, like, hey, cherish these moments with your father when you can. Go talk to him and maybe he'll listen. And then we see him like sitting still and like watching it the first time. I was like, oh, he's dead. And then even watching it the second time, I was like, I know he's not, but like, he looks dead. He's not moving.
Why would they shoot it that way?
And it would have been so perfect because it would have given him an easy excuse to keep mining the Mithril. It would have given him this regret of like not being able to say goodbye to his father or his last conversation not being what he wanted it to be. It would have been such a good motivational thing for this character. It would have just driven the story so perfectly, and then we wouldn't have the leaf waking up the Balrog. And I even said this, like, when Disa's singing, like, the rocks are, like, shaking. And I was like, I would think that they make it seem like that's the Balrog. That it's like,
oh, so now that those rocks that are shaking, I believe, are Disa making them move.
Okay, got it.
That's what I think in that moment. Yeah.
Okay, if that's the explanation, then I'm fine with it. But like for me, it'd be like, oh, they're starting to delve too deeply already, because like when we get to the moment, and maybe it's not even like till 7 or 8 or something like that. It's like, how did they mine Mithril for a long time? Like so much so that like that scene in Moria, in Fellowship, these shafts are crazy. Crazy. And they make it seem like the only reason this is Moria is because of Mithril, so much so that they're making full shirts out of it and just giving them away willy-nilly. That's how much Mithril there is. And so I'm wondering, like, I know we're jumping ahead a few episodes, but I'm wondering, like, how that's going to happen with the Balrog, because it doesn't seem like it's encased in stone. It seems like it's just like way further down the well. Right. So I don't know how.
I would think a Balrog is coming from the magma core of.
Yeah. That's like he's behind some mountain jail or something like that. Like he went to hide in the mountain and then it collapsed behind him or something like that. And so I don't know.
Oh, that could be it. Because this was my question when I first watched it, too. How long do they have to mine Mithril so that they can have it, not in abundance, but enough of it?
It's got to be at least 25 years. Like, I don't know.
Of Mithril, for sure.
Like, granted, they showed us the beginnings of the Tower of Eregion. They're busting ass. They are, like, Age of Empires. You click on, you know, oh, I want a church over here. And the... Like, they're doing that. This is why
there's
you hired
a tower
the door.
Already.
Yeah. Yes. It is there. So, granted, it might could be, like, 6 months, and they just got a pile of Mithril.
Sure.
But it is... a weird beat that Durin basically just says, he doesn't like take the crown from him. That's later on. But he's just like, this is done.
Oh, yeah.
It's too perilous. Like, we're lucky that all four of the dwarves that got caved in survived. But yeah, it was, I was thinking about that. And I was like, he should have died. Like, I'm glad the actor's getting a few more episodes of work. But hey, I just like story beat wise, it would have just like flowed so perfectly. And I feel like, again, this is where the wheel spinning comes in, where it's like, he's got to die eventually. Like, like Durin has to become king to reignite the Mithril tunnels and whatever is going to happen. Because we end the season, I think, you know, with him kind of, you know, he's not the prince anymore. Like, and that's kind of it. And I think is the last time we see the dwarves with the Balrog? Is that?
The last time we see Durin is when Disa is like, again, like showing her teeth, like, we're gonna be in charge, we're gonna get the Mithril, we're gonna, like, you know, basically in
full Cersei Lannister. I like
correct
it.
Like without saying it, but not even, she's not suggesting it, but might as well be saying, we'll kill the king.
Yeah, a little bit of regicide over there.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's but there's a Lady M thing going on.
Yeah,
for sure. Which they're foreshadowing pretty well in this episode, you know?
Yeah, she's about her business for sure. And I love that character of Disa, but it just seems like, again, this just like, we have to kind of run in place here for a little bit. We're going too far with the Mithril, and it has to be secret. And then we have to reveal that, like, the elves need it, but they can't mine it. And it's, I don't know. It just.
No, you're totally right. Because then let's look at what's going to happen next episode. They should be sailing to the west, but we just watch them all train for another episode. Like, you're totally right that it's just kicking rocks until, okay, well, we can restart the story again. Then just make it 7 episodes. Make it 6.
Everyone would like that. Granted, maybe the... I don't know. I feel like Amazon could save money, like, you know, and not paying everybody, you know, a full set and cast and crew for 10 episodes when you can do 8. You could save, you know, $100 million or something like that. Like,
but knowing when to edit is really important, right? Like, when they say to writers, kill your babies. If you love it, even if you love it, it's the most beautiful shot. Peter Jackson could do that. He was good at that. He's like, you know what? We don't need this. We don't need this beat twice. We get the extended versions. Give us the extended 17-episode season. We'll take it. Make it a... There's something I like. There's parts of it that I like, that it takes its time. But when you're repeating the beat and not letting us learn more, then you're offending my time.
Yeah. So we move on to the Southlands. Unless you, did you have anything else about the dwarves?
No.
We move on to the Southlands. And this is where Arondir meets Adar. And I was wearing like my hood over my headphones or vice versa. I just couldn't hear a lot of what Adar was saying. But it's like a really good conversation in between them.
He talks like this.
And he basically says, go tell the Southlands people they're staying at the Watchtower. Go tell them to vacate or swear fealty to me. And then you get Theo and his little buddy going back into the village for rations. And of course, he just like, they have again, this is easy visual things where you have him with like a full wheelbarrow full of stuff. Like, you cut from them walking up to the village to being like, oh, there's all the stuff right there. And he's like, oh, I guess I need to go get one more bag of rice. It's like, no, you have them with like his friend's got 2 bags and then he's got 1 bag. He's like, this is just isn't enough. We need to go look for something. And his friend like just runs off because he's too scared. But not like a full wheel. Like, you're good. You did a great job. Like, honestly, no one thought you could do it. And you did it. Like,
yeah,
you proved the haters wrong.
Leave.
take your W. But of course he doesn't. He gets trapped by the orcs. He spends the night in the well, tries to escape. Arondir saves him at the last moment.
So good. So good.
And yeah, this is a great like action scene of like them running through the forest, him catching the arrow and re-knocking it and shooting the guy in the face. Awesome.
Kicking. I love that it kicks Theo down too. He's like, he yeah. knocks him down. It's very funny.
Yeah. And then kid deserves it. But also, like, are the orcs vampires? Are they that, like, allergic to the sun that they can't go, in, like, into the field? Like, they desperately need this, you know, this thing where Theo, you know, once again stabs himself with the spear and the blood ignites the blade and the orcs like, there it is, we need it! And that's why they're searching for him so desperately.
They need it so desperately that they're searching for it during the day.
Yes.
Like you they literally see the go guy out. That finds yes.
Yeah, I know it's like it's like Blade where they put on sunscreen and they're, you know, immune to the sun or like it helps
them. Is
that
them. Right?
They do. And so it's like that's they put amazing. On like a tiny cloak or like it becomes overcast.
A snake skin thing or whatever.
Yeah. But
I think it just hurts also, them.
Yeah.
The sun hurts them.
Gotcha. And also you have the buff baker, butcher, bartender, whatever his occupation is.
Haldred.
Have you heard of Sauron, lad? Like,
ugh.
Good scene. That guy is giving it his all. That's some good Middle Earth casting right there. Like, I'm totally. Glad they gave him some meat to chew on in that scene because he takes
full advantage. So bad. He's such a bad guy. You know, like, the thing that the elves were afraid of is him incarnate, right?
Yeah.
Which, and it's so well cast. It's so well done. We come to find out that shitty kid that goes with Theo to go get the food is also a piece of shit, you know, Sauron apologist.
Yeah.
And like, so like, they're all kind of bad people. And even Theo is like on temptation's doorstop. Haldreg's so bad that he's trying to give Theo drink, like an alcohol drink. He's like, you deserve it, lad.
Have a sip of whiskey, lad.
That's for someone who does what you did. And you stole my, you know. It's, ugh. Anyway, Theo, I think, is beginning to get the taste of like, ooh, do I want to end up like Haldreg? Is that what I want? Probably not.
Yeah.
And Arondir saved his ass. And you're totally right. They Arondir gets him. It's dawn. He, you know, Milf shows up with her sickle and they start running. He's like, get to the clearing. And they get to the clearing just in time for the cloud clever to release. And the orcs are like, forget it. We're just not going to come back.
You're right. You're right there. But
maybe next time. I'm not going to use my arrow on you right now.
We've been shooting arrows this whole chase, but now we don't have any.
We're good.
Yeah.
Also, it's possible that they know that Arondir has a message. Is it possible that they're like, oh, it's that elf? And like, do you know what I mean? Because Adar let him go with the message. So,
I mean, I feel like that's like giving it a little too much where like if they would have pretended for him to escape or something like that, like, you know, Millennium Falcon, where they put the tracker on the ship and they let them escape to find the rebel base. Sure. If they didn't know that the humans were at the watchtower and he didn't say, I need to give you a message, like, then maybe.
Sure.
When, like, they Adar could have been walking away and be like, oh, these Southland, we're going to take over the Southlands and, you know, they follow Adar without him knowing it or something like that. Then that'd be one thing, but I don't know. It's a very
credit.
Cool scene, but it's feel like a little too much credit, but. It's a good scene, and I like where this is leading, where like you're starting to see the true colors of the Southlanders, and I like that a lot. Because even it's a good moment, like even when the kid comes back with the wheelbarrow, like it gets mobbed, and like, you know, everyone's just like taking what they can.
Yeah.
It's like, that's tough.
Yeah, like are these that's what, you know, the Lord of the Rings movies do pretty well. Is like, what part of humans do we want to preserve? What are humans worth preserving? You know?
Yeah.
And these are not great humans necessarily. And even Numenoreans suck, man.
But that's the thing, is that you have the Southlanders being like the stereotypical like descendants of the servants of Sauron and like maybe, you know, do a few bad apples ruin the bunch, like, because, you know, Bronwyn is, you know, she seems to be good, and like, yeah, her son is like looking at some alt-right websites, but like he's teetering right now, like he's seeing some Andrew Tate TikToks, but he doesn't know which way to lean. But it's just like, you have to have the Numenoreans not also be elf racists and not talking about like, oh, the immigrants are going to take our jobs. It's just like, I'm not rooting for any men right now besides like maybe Elendil. That's it.
That's it. And he is the best of them. That he is the Aragorn descendant. You know what I mean? Not descendant, but, you know, ancestor.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. But how did he get that way? You know?
Exactly. Like, yeah. He shouldn't be the only person. Like, they're, I don't know. It's,
no, I'm
again,
with you.
Like, they're seeds that I see, but it's just like zigging when they needed a zag.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, we get the message finally delivered to Bronwyn that Adar's going to, like, come take over if they don't swear fealty to him.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of, like, their cliffhanger, if I'm correct in remembering that.
Yes, that they're, like, marching towards the Watchtower and, like, they got to start defending it.
Is that the next episode or do they make us wait? Is the next episode the attack? Which there's some pretty good fighting from Arondir and some
I'm not
good
sure.
Arrow.
I don't know if we're going to get a lot of Numenorean training and maybe some more Harfoot stuff because we didn't get any Harfoot stuff this episode. So
we were better for it.
Yeah. And it was not missed. I told Jess, I was like, I'm waiting to pee until when the Harfoot show up for our watch along. And they never did. So I just had to hold it. So I was like, okay, you know what? It is what it is.
It is what it is. Well, I think that about does it. What would you say you're over? A good episode.
A good episode. This is where, again, if they sail this next episode, and even if you have an episode of them on the boat, of like talking of like, oh, I'm so excited to go to the West. Like, are we doing the right thing? Do we care about these people in the Southlands? Do we care about Middle Earth? Like, have we been isolating ourselves? Like, all this stuff. That's great. But instead, we have Galadriel water dancing with a bunch of sailors who don't know how to swing a sword, and that's it. That's all we get. And so it's just like, if this was overall a good episode, good plot progression, great conversation with Arondir and Adar, some good Sauron hint stuff, you know, retrospectively we can see it, some good Galadriel like, oh, I don't have to brute force my way through everything, okay, that's cool. And then, you know, if you like the side characters, like the daughter and the son of the politicians, like getting like their meet cute and stuff like that, like there's some good stuff in here for sure.
There's definitely good storytelling stuff. It's the pacing of it all.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you would like to join us for our watch through watch along that we do with our patrons before we do our recap recording of the show, you can do that by joining our Patreon over at patreon.com/podcastoftherings. Ben's eventually going to change all of our social media handles. And once we do that, we'll let you know. But I can guarantee it won't be hard to find us. If you just type in podcast of the rings, you're going to find us one way
gonna
or another.
Us.
You're going to find us. Yeah, guys. Okay. So stay tuned for the next episode. Reminder also of your Patreon, not just do you get to join us to watch the video. You could get exclusive access to the video version of this show. You get early access to the show. And the more we grow, the more fun things that are going to happen there. So help us grow. Show us that you like us. I need to know that you like me.
I need that validation.
Me too, bro. You and I are very similar, and I'm losing sleep over it. All right.
Yep.
Until next time, Ben.
May our paths meet again.